Welcome to a Heritage Radio Network special. We have as our guest today Christopher Carpenter, who is, amongst other things, the chairman of the board of Slow Food USA. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Patrick.
So tell us, you just had a really, really big Slow Food event, which one of its intentions was to help change the diet of students for the better, and there was a big Slow Food National project. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. In late October, the Childhood Nutrition Act will come up for reauthorization in Congress. This is the act that covers how school lunches are funded, how they're directed, meaning what kind of nutritional guidelines there are for the schools to look at to decide on what kind of food they're bringing into the schools, and how they're managed once they're on school property. Slow Food decided that it would be a good idea to bring attention to this. You know, right now we're hearing so much about healthcare and the healthcare bill that our president is talking about. This is something that goes back to that, goes to causality rather than reaction, which is what healthcare is about these days. It's just reacting to a system that's not working. Mm-hmm. With 1 in 3 kids in danger of having childhood obesity. And 1 in 4 kids in danger of contracting type 2 diabetes before they're 12 years old. Mm-hmm. We thought that this would be a good act to focus some of our attention and to draw and to get people involved in. We did a series of eat-ins, which is based on the 60s model of a sit-in, but with a meal involved. Just slow food, you know, that's part of our way of bringing people together is sharing a meal. Mm-hmm. And what better way to do it around a subject like this, childhood nutrition and how our kids are being taught about food and eating. With the idea that we're drawing attention to a very national issue, an act that's federally based, but that out of this will come some local action.
And now, but you were saying earlier at dinner that all politics is local anyway. So you might have national things going on, but what's happening on the local level is just as important.
I think it's more important. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a national effort. We had over 300 of these eat-ins from Boston to San Diego, across the nation, and I think in all 50 states. Mm. You know, the idea is that we have this huge effort and 300 eat-ins going on at the same time, and people will take that effort as a signal to create change in this national act. But honestly, if you're having an eat-in in a community, who are the people that you are bringing in? You're bringing in your local congressman, your local superintendent mm-hmm. of schools, your local dietitians and childhood diabetes experts, your parents, your principals, mm-hmm. and you're talking about local issues. And hopefully, in the course of this, you're bringing in your local farmer that can supply these schools and help them create a community where everybody wins. The parents win because they know that their children during that 8-hour period that they're at school are being fed the right kind of food. Mm-hmm. The community wins because they're not investing as much in health care, because children are not going to be as affected by different kinds of food systems than mm-hmm. are currently available. And the kids win and the farmers win. The kids win because they get a great meal, great flavor, great taste. And the farmers win because now they're feeding that community that they're growing in.
Well, I mean, as someone who says that all politics is local, you were the founder of the Napa Valley Convivium. So give us a real, like, lens into a real event, like your sit-in in Napa. Like, who was there? What were some of their organizations? And what do you think will be the long-term results of that day?
Well, that's a great question. So we had a really great success story in Napa that we used as a model. That success story was, in Napa, there are three main communities in Napa Valley. There is Napa City, St. Helena, and Calistoga. In St. Helena, the school system there decided to partner with one of the local growers, Long Meadow Ranch, mm-hmm. to bring in Long Meadow Ranch's food one day a week, that all the food that is served to the kids are from the ranch. The community knows exactly where it's coming from. Most of the people in that community know the Halls, Ted and Laddie, who produce this food. They have a connection with the community, and the kids get a really flavorful burger that day, and they cook them outdoors, and the smell wafts through the school. And I mean, come on, it's a barbecue. Everybody's happy. We decided to take that model and create a roundtable around discussing why that model may or may not work in a larger school system like Napa City. Napa City is about probably 10 times the size of the St. Helena community. So it's a very different system. You're dealing with 10 different grade schools, 3 different high schools, a much broader funding base. It's a very different community. But what we did was we brought in the superintendent of the Napa Valley Unified School District. We brought in the coordinator for health and safety at the St. Helena School District, who was instrumental in bringing in the Halls and Long Meadow Ranch to the school. We brought in the woman who runs the Childhood Obesity and Juvenile Diabetes Coalition in Napa, who's an expert on these kind of issues.
And you were saying like 1 in 3 children is going to have diabetes? I mean, what was that?
1 in 3 will be obese under the guidelines of childhood obesity.
Wow.
1 in 4 is in danger, therefore, because of the obesity, to contract childhood diabetes, which not only is a strain on their childhood, you know, they have to lead a very different life having this kind of diabetes, this kind of disease. But it's part of the issues that we're talking about with the healthcare system.
Right. I mean, as a shared responsibility to minimize your environmental footprint on the healthcare system, staying healthy becomes all the more important.
Yeah. You know, so often in our country, we deal with issues after they've happened.
Right.
We want to find the solution for the problem after it's happened, where we really don't need to do that if we think long term and try to work with causal agents. And this is a big one. How we teach our kids about food. And we had this discussion at dinner, you know, is it all on the schools? No, but there's a good portion of it that is on the schools. There's a portion of it that's on parents, and we need to be able to develop those kind of conversations so that kids know what they're going to eat.
Absolutely. Well, so interesting. So how have you come to this? And maybe for our listeners out there, I'll just start things off and then you can bring it to today. You were once an offensive lineman for the Fighting Illini, is that correct? And we were once anti the removal of their traditional Native American mascot. Is that true that you once took that stance?
In fact, I was not an offensive lineman. I was a defensive lineman.
I'm sorry.
It's a very different position.
Totally different skill sets. 100%.
I will say to the audience that I was not told that I was being asked this question, so it is taking me a bit off guard, and he brings this up quite a bit when we're together.
It can't be off guard.
You know, I was a defensive lineman for the Fighting Illini. The Illini was a tribe in Illinois that the state was named after. Mm-hmm. It's an honorific, and you know, you can argue one way or another whether you agree with honoring that group of people that was in the area before Anglos were in the area. That's a whole nother conversation.
I mean, I kind of agree with you, which is why I said, I mean, that was held in very high esteem. That was a very positive, it was worshipped almost, you know?
But we're talking about food here.
True.
And as an Illini, I was also a bartender, and I became involved in the restaurant industry, and it was something that I've pursued in my career. I'm a winemaker. I make wine for Cardinal and La Coya Wines in Napa Valley. And my passion is to try to teach children and the community in general about what farmers do on a very local basis to create systems that sustain environments, communities, and a more reasonable food system than the one that we're currently living with industrialized foods.
So I was just wondering about how your own kids are involved in this. You talk about the school lunches and you talk about, you know, the barbecues with the local farms. how do they participate? How do you guys facilitate this kind of discussion and learning at home, and how are they involved?
Well, that's an excellent question, and one that we struggle with, not as parents for my children, but trying to impart the importance of that kind of education to a great number of parents, and parents that don't have the time to sit down for a meal every night, don't have the money that can pay for the kind of food that we bring into our house. And that's a huge issue. My kids are very lucky. Food is a focus in our house. So we have a garden in our backyard that my daughters participate with my darling wife, Tina, in growing that garden, picking the fruit, deciding what's being planted. In the Napa Valley, we're very food-centric. Most of the schools in Napa Valley have some sort of garden program. It's varying at the levels of participation. As a matter of fact, on that panel that we talked a little bit about earlier, one of the people on the panel was a gentleman who oversees the seed-to-table program at one of the high schools and developing a garden and taking that food all the way from seed to the cafeteria and or the teacher's lounge, where a lot of that food gets eaten. So there's opportunities in Napa to really impact kids. And I'm involved in slow food. So whenever there's a slow food event, I'm dragging my kids with us. I mean, a slow food event is everything from education to connecting with the farmer to hanging out on a farm. And as a kid, come on, you've got pigs, you've got cows in Napa Valley, you've got grapes, you've got raptors flying overhead, you've got gopher snakes running around, you're in an idyllic situation. The kids can't help but be affected by it. But that, you know, going back to that word idyllic, that's the idyllic situation. The issue comes when you're not as focused on it. You maybe want to help your children, but you're two parents that are working 9-10 hours a day. You come home, you're tired. You want to keep your kids happy, you know. So what do? You give them something that keeps them happy, because you don't have. It's hard to carry that kind of thought process on to families that maybe are struggling with one thing or the other: their time, their money, their
health. It could be any.
Any number of issues, and that's where the challenge comes in. That's where this National Day of Action that we just had, I think that's the biggest follow-up that we need to do. We're getting a lot of press on this as an organization. The local schools, the local politicians are aware of it now. And maybe something will happen at the school level, and that'll be great. But then the big question is, okay, how do we continue the education of the parents? And how do we affect not my kids as much as the kids who have been accustomed to coming home and there's a nice hot meal, but it's McDonald's, and I hate to disparage McDonald's or any company. It's whatever it is. It's something that is not healthy for them. That's the key. I think that's what we need to work on.
This is Joe Bastianich, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Chris, tell us a little bit about the state of slow food and some of the projects that excite you the most about the future, and how people out there, our listeners, can participate.
Well, one of the great things that's happened to slow food, as a matter of fact, a year ago this past weekend, was we decided to change the direction of slow food to a degree that things that stemmed out of that were this National Day of Action. We want to become much more activist-oriented. There's so many issues around the food system and how we're feeding our country. And again, going back to issues around health, around sustainability, around environmental impact of the ag world, that we needed somebody to start focusing on that and to develop a program and ideas around affecting some of these issues or drawing attention to these issues, very much like what the Sierra Club does for the environment.
True national level policy change.
Yeah. So as a result of this thought process that happened over the course of a couple of years, we decided to bring in a new president to the organization, Josh Vertel.
We were fortunate enough to have him as a guest on one of these shows on Heritage Radio.
Yeah, and Josh is a great forward thinker, mm-hmm. and he's looked at these issues for most of his career, from being a dirt farmer to helping change how Yale mm-hmm. buys and brings their food into that school system.
The Yale Sustainable Food Project, I mean, a real beacon project.
Sure. And we needed somebody like that. And we needed somebody that had that vision. And that's what it's often about. You need somebody that can create the vision, very similar to what you did, Patrick. And for those of you that don't know, if he probably mentions this all the time, though. Patrick was our first executive director for Slow Food. And Patrick's mantra, and he did it exceptionally he did it exceptionally well, was to develop the name recognition of slow food in the United States and to get people excited about it. And he had an...
I'll tell you one thing, and I'm about to reveal it with the sound effect. It was all thanks to this single tool. The slide whistle, ladies and gentlemen. Instantly gets people on your side.
So we needed to go, we needed to evolve, and that's been the biggest evolution. And it's, I think it, we have, there's a whole host of food system related issues that we're starting to focus on. Mm-hmm. And we have a staff now that is remotivated, mm-hmm. re-energized, and starting to work on these things. And it's
they're not on hormones, are they, or antibiotics, right? It's just natural energy, right?
It's natural. Okay. Energy. It's very organic. Thank you, Alice.
So tell us a little bit about, I'm always fascinated because it's such our most popular terroir in America is no doubt, in my mind, Napa Valley. I mean, it's a true international beacon. What's the state of Napa Valley wines? And tell us a little bit about your work and your energy in the wine industry.
So I'm the winemaker for three Cabernet-based wines, Cardinal, La Coya, and La Jota. These wines are sourced, I think, from some of the really special places in Napa Valley to create really intense California-style wines. What's the state of Napa Valley? Napa, like most industries, Napa being one of the hearts of the wine industry in the United States, is going through a change. I mean, everything is becoming a little more streamlined. We're not selling as much wine, I'll be honest with you, in general as an industry. But I think what it's doing, just like it is with all industries, the people that were in it for the passion, for the reality, for making a really good product, are those that are going to be left once we've gone through this change. Just like everything else that we've seen out there, you know, the hangers on, the people.
It's almost like a shakedown.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, whoever sticks on is legit.
And we, you know, to bang the drum for the wineries that I represent, we do it right. I mean, we are our grower, you know, the farmer that I work with, Mariano Navarro, he is focused on quality from seed to finished product. You know, seed and vines is not a reality, but mm-hmm. from planting the plant to finished product. And you know, I think my staff and I are focused on that same thing, and we're trying to create products that people really, you know, get their money's worth, because ultimately that's what it's about.
And if there was a young kid out there that was like, do I want to go into the wine industry? I mean, what was your experience and what would be your advice to someone out there? I mean, is it to taste a million wines? Is it to read a book? I mean, what's your secret, you know, for success in the U.S. wine industry?
Well, I think it's the same success that you have with anything. Do you have a passion about it? Mm-hmm. If you have a passion about it, whether it's wine, whether it's cheese, whether it's being a radio star like you, Patrick.
Thank you. Well, I've always had a great face for radio.
Yeah. Then you should follow that passion. And it doesn't matter what kind of money you're making. I mean, you got to pay the bills, but if you can wake up in the morning and you can't wait to get out of bed to do it, you should do it.
Hi, this is Moby, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Is that like Moby the...
yeah, man. That's the real guy.
Didn't he and Eminem have like this whole thing for a while?
Yeah. Eminem didn't like his tea brand. So he was like... well, this has been really, amazing. I mean, is there anything that we didn't quite cover? I mean, do you want to talk to Slow Foods International projects a little bit? Like cheese or...
You know, I got to be honest with you. I've been so focused on the national agenda that my understanding of all that they're doing internationally is somewhat limited, and it wouldn't be...
It wouldn't be the best. What about being a chairman of the board? Like, what skill sets you have to call upon to help arbitrate a national movement? I mean, could you speak 2 minutes to the leadership aspect of that? I mean, I think that could be very interesting.
I think my main role right now is we're going through this change. Mm-hmm. We're evolving from an organization that was really focused on artisanal products and introducing those artisanal products to the masses and connecting people with the farmers that were producing those, to an organization that's really trying to impact the food system in general and not be as, you know, for a long time, our organization was more the activism was a little less intense. And there's a word for it, and I'm not remembering the word, but it was more subtle. Uh-huh. Now we're actually asking for people to make that change and being very direct about it. I think my job is to guide and help guide Josh and his staff in understanding where Slow Food has been,
right? And which you know very well,
which I know very well, and to remind them of that as they bring Slow Food to where it's going to go. That, I think, is my job. The individual dealing with the chapter leaders and being the politico between the governors and the body politic that is Slow Food, that's not my role.
Right.
It really isn't. My role is to advise and help the staff develop the programs that are going to bring Slow Food into a prominent role in food system change.
Well, kind of in academic terms, basically, you are going to try to avoid this, and you're going to try to create this.
Yes. What? That's exactly right. You love that sound effect.
I'm taking it home with me. Jack, can we disconnect this thing? Well, Chris, this has been absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it's such an honor that you would come out and grace this network with your presence. And it's a huge responsibility, fiduciary and otherwise, to be the chairman of the board of SoFood USA. There's no doubt. Is there anything else that we haven't covered yet? A last message to the millions and millions of listeners to Heritage Radio Network and the iTunable download group? Maybe not millions. That's what the statistic my mother uses, but maybe it's fewer. But
drink more wine, connect with your local farmer, no matter who he is, and listen to Heritage Radio as often as you can.
Nice. Well, if that deserves one thing, it deserves sound effect C8. Well, thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure, and hopefully you'll be on many times in the future.
I hope so. Thanks, Patrick.